Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. This is a very joyful day for me because I am at last getting to meet and talk to Maxine Hong Kingston, whose writing has been a great subject for my admiration and repeated respect. She is the author, of course, of Woman Warrior, China Man, Trip Master Monkey, his fake book, a book I don't know called Hawaii One Summer, and a book of essays about poetry and poems, To Be the Poet. Her new book is The Fifth Book of Peace. It's published by Alfred A. Knopf. And in many ways, it brings together many of the concerns of the earlier books in a formal way, a desire to have the reader participate in the structuring of an experience so that the experience becomes formed by writing and communicated through writing and changed by writing. But let's start by asking, what is a book of peace?
I am hoping that a book of peace would be a way to imagine our world in loving harmony, and it would be a book in which I can write about people and characters who can solve their problems and their interactions with one another in loving, nonviolent ways.
But apparently there is an imaginary tradition of books of peace in Chinese literature, yes?
Maybe.
Maybe.
There is a myth that maybe there existed three books of peace, and in them would be tactics on how to end war and how to build a harmonious community together. But it's also part of the ancient story that those books are lost. And so I had set out to find them. And I've been to China and Asia 7-8 times, and every time I've tried to find some trace of these books. Is there a line of poetry that points the way? But what I've found is the book The Art of War by Sun Tzu is alive and extant and being translated and
used for business students.
For business students and for and at military academies, but no book of peace. And so I set out to write one.
What's very moving is that the first section of the book tells about Maxine Hong Kingston's guests, the experience of a devastation. Her entire home went up in flames in 1991, I believe.
Yes, and not just my home, but the neighborhood and forest, the Oakland-Berkeley firestorm of 1991.
And what it brings to mind is not just the loss of the manuscript that was in the house and all of the memories that are in the house and the writing room that was in the house, but the idea that this fire is a message from the father who was dead, who was asking to be remembered. Now, Maxine's mother does not agree with this interpretation. She feels that he saved her from the fire and that everything else was insignificant. But she feels that this is the need of the land to manifest something that Americans are ignoring the destruction they bring to other places. And it is then that she imagines the book to be as a commemorative of loss similar to the loss in conflagrations worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is meant to be individual as well as universal, to address creation, but in the acknowledgement of constant loss. Now, to set about to do this in a book, having lost a book, seems to me to be a monumental project.
Mm-hmm.
What begins to allow you to write the writing of absence?
I suppose one way that I could come at creating a book or creating anything again after such losses is a faith, an idea that maybe there is a Platonic book of peace out there, and it wants to be expressed out in the world, and maybe it is looking for the writer who wants to write it, and maybe that book will be coming through me. And so that was one belief that was part of my education that helped me to try once more. But another idea came to me, which is that I had been working alone, and I was in the tradition of the solitary artist, just waiting in that attic for the muse to find me. But here I was, writing a book in which I would imagine the peaceful world. And the communication and communities of peaceful people. So why should I be doing this all by myself? And so one of the first things that I did right after the fire was to gather a community of fellow writers and artists and makers around me. And so I sent out a call for veterans of all wars and their families to be my writing community. And they came, and we wrote together. And I evoked the bodhisattva of compassionate listening, Avalokiteshvara, who is also Kuan Yin, who is also Canon. And this is a god, a spirit who has been both man and woman. This is a spirit of destruction and also creation. And so we evoked her and to come to inspire us to create the new writings.
Now, one of the things that moves me very deeply, toward the beginning of the book, you mentioned the poet Lew Welch,
mm-hmm.
and how he said that to pay attention to the war at all was to give it energy and to participate in its conflagratory growth. And the characters in this book, when the novel proper begin, they are turning their back on information in a certain sense. Information is traditionally the province of the novelist. Nouns and things. And you say toward the beginning that you decided, like William Carlos Williams, he says, no ideas but in things, and you say, no things but in ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an attempt to, in a way, dematerialize the novel and to dematerialize war. What interests me is that you're writing a book about exercising or vanishing part of its subject. That seems to me, yes, to involve bringing together a group involves the dissolution of the self. Mm-hmm. But what were the ways in which you disentangled yourself from the specificities of the things you mm-hmm. wanted to transform or avoid?
Well, what I discovered was that it's impossible to turn away. It's impossible to do as what Lew Welch said. He said that he was going to leave Chicago, and maybe it will some of it will die if he's not around feeding it anymore. And so Whitman, in my book, he leaves the mainland United States, and he's hoping that if his bad energy isn't helping to fuel the war in Vietnam, maybe it will calm down. Maybe if we quit perceiving the violent world, then we will see something else. After much struggle in the book, I see that this is impossible, that we may not want to think about fire and firefights and firestorm, but there's nothing I can do. It'll come and catch up with me, and it'll burn the book, and it'll burn the things, and it will kill the people. And so those wars come, and what can an individual, one tiny person, what can we do? And so I am working on trying to show how an individual life can keep up its spirits, keep creating. What can we make in the face of that? And what I'm hoping that we can make is that, one community burns and start another one.
Well, it seemed to me as I was reading that the book is about what can happen to identity once you're willing for it to dissolve. Mm-hmm. And there's a hallucinatory section, quite beautiful and quite long. It seems as if Whitman is merely going out for supplies. But in fact, he has brought his family, his wife and child, to one of the Hawaiian islands. And he circles the island almost in the way that Ulysses goes from island to island on his way home. Mm-hmm. He's making a circle of a day on his way home, and what he's learning during that day is that he is some version of everyone he meets, mm-hmm. a family mm-hmm. at their grace at meals who are performing hulas and extraordinarily intimate, loving, communicative dances, but also a man who wants to shoot him, also a couple of GIs who, it turns out, are themselves against the war. But you feel that he is on an odyssey. Mm-hmm. Before he can mm-hmm. come home, mm-hmm. he has to not find out who he is, but stop being himself.
He becomes nobody.
Yes.
The way Odysseus also is called nobody.
Yes.
And it could be the emptying out of the old identity, in this case, the old American identity, or his Chinese American identity, this construct that had happened to him earlier. And so, in a way, it's a Buddhist thing that happens, that there's an emptiness. And when the emptiness happens, then a transformation, a new self comes in. And I am hoping that I was able to create a better new self, this self that can know how to make a better world, a loving world. And when he becomes nobody, the old connections are separated. and then he can make new connections, and a lot of connections. You know, he can make connections with people that he had formerly thought were the enemy. And so as many new relations happen, new relationships, then again the new community forms.
As he travels, in fact, he becomes aware that among the people he meets, that ethnicity is a matter of fiction, that you can mm-hmm. say who mm-hmm. you are, mm-hmm. that it's become mm-hmm. almost a joke.
Mm-hmm. And even gender is something that we make up, yes.
Could you speak more about that? Because, you know, so much of what we're taught about writing and its reason is about the communication of the personal story and the specificity of memory, and the writer, only this writer would write this thing in this way. And this is a book that's very much interested almost in breaking the conventions of writing.
I think that what happens at the beginning of the book and in the big fire was that I myself, the author, broke down and became nobody. And my previous work was destroyed in the fire. And also my ways of being a writer also vanished. And so when I returned to writing again, I had to find new processes and a new form. And so this means that I need to experiment with what is nonfiction, what is realism, what is reality, and what is fiction, what is this thing that that is poetry. What states of mind does a writer go into in order to be a poet or to be a reality maker or a fantasy maker? And so the goal that I had set out in this book was to write peace, to make peace, to create and invent peace. And to me, that is such an abstraction. And so I come at it with all the tools that I have: a nonfiction, poetry, fiction, myth, epic, serial, various ways of rhythmic language. And also coming at it by myself, but also with others. What if I were to write with others? What would happen? And through these experiments, I've come out with this strange book, which I think that I am being elemental here, going back to basic forces, and so there is this element of fire, which destroys and creates in a strange way, and so. What happens to stories when they are in a firefight? About 2 years after this fire, I found a need for water. And I found myself identifying fire with reality and water with fiction. And that's so it is in the Chinese mind. Water and dragon go together. Dragon is a fantasy animal, and the dragon is made of the mist and of rivers and snow, and it is in the sky. And I found my mind that makes up fiction also goes into the sky and into the mist. And there I make up and see visions that I could not see with my ordinary fire reality.
I'm speaking to Maxine Hong Kingston about her new book, The Fifth Book of Peace. It is also, in a way, her fifth book, although it is, that's counting a fourth book that disappeared in the fire. How does one have the confidence to write a book in which those conventions of book writing, individual identity, heroism, so many things in this book are let go?
Well, you know, I did not have confidence, and I did not know that I would be able to write again or to read again, because that was one of the traumas after the fire, was not even to be able to read. But actually, I never have confidence, not just this book that was destroyed in a fire, but whenever I write, I never have the confidence that my efforts will result in anything. And so I can go for a decade and not know that all my scribblings would coalesce into anything. But I just go ahead, going down an unknown path, and I build a road as I go along, and maybe I end up somewhere, and maybe I do not.
Now, I remember when I, during the 60s, there was the prayer that this experience would be so unwordable, the experience of Vietnam, that maybe we would not get a new generation of From Here to Eternities and, you know, all of the men who come home, who've gone off to war to find their stories and who come home to tell it. You know, the war which used to supposedly turn people into men was turning certain men into writers. And one hoped for a very long time that there would be no such evidence of the Vietnam War. And it took a long time, too. It took a good 10 years after that war was so-called ended before you began to get novels about it, mm-hmm. like Going After Cacciato. And it really seemed maybe as a culture, at least for a period, we had evolved past the need for the Iliad, past the need for war narrative. Now it almost seems as if it has come back, the spirit of war narrative, the spirit of telling the war story. And it seems that the profusion of narrative about war, it's almost like a jack-in-the-box, like something that reemerged. I don't know if my listeners can remember or were alive to know that feeling of we ain't going to study war no mm-hmm, more, mm-hmm. that we would not allow this to happen again, mm-hmm. to make creativity's subject, central male subject, be war. And so in a way, this book is in some way an address that asks that part of the creative spirit that has invested itself in the war narrative be quelled, subside, mm-hmm. find other mechanisms.
Yes. I am calling for a peace narrative. And that is so difficult in our mental construct of what a dramatic narrative is. From Aristotle's definitions, we have classical drama in which there is rising violent action that culminates in explosive war. And then we get to resolution. But can we have a story where people act nonviolently? and they have peaceful intentions and go through peaceful actions. But is that dramatic enough? Would it be exciting? And we have a culture that loves excitement. And so this is what I'm experimenting with here. Is it possible to have dramatic action that is nonviolent? And then with the...
Nonviolent or not shaped even like violence, as you say, heading toward cataclysm and climax and resolution. Is it just the politics of nonviolence, or is it that formal nature?
I am thinking about the form.
Yes.
I am thinking of new forms. Or as in the Heart Sutra in Buddhism, they talk about no form. But what is no form?
What is no form?
Yeah, what is it? I don't know. No form is impossible in this real world that we live in, but in literature, maybe every sentence can have drama and excitement, so that maybe the drama and excitement can it culminate in two people looking at each other in love. And there is the hug, and that is the climax. And the language at that point is very exciting and very colorful. And so that does feel like the climax of the book and not the shootout. Mm-hmm. Instead of the shootout, throughout this book, I have had two people, and they are dancing together lovingly. They are looking into each other's eyes, and it is it's two people meeting in love, or there are two people and they were former enemies, a Viet Cong woman and a Vietnam American vet, and they are hugging and crying. And that is the climax of that scene.
I've been speaking with Maxine Hong Kingston, the author most recently of the fifth book of Peace, published by Alfred A. Knopf. Thank you for joining me, Maxine. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Ray Guarna. Special production assistance from Alan Howard and Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com, keyword bookworm. Cassette copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Everything, they're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now with Book of the Mouse, Mouse Time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.